BPR Podcast.
Hi, it's December 1st. My name is Jared Key, and I'm here with Michael D'Artenzio and Oliver Hudson again. This week's segment of Brown Political Review podcast version, we'll be discussing education policy. How are you both doing?
Good, thank you.
Great, I'm glad to be here.
Great. So why don't we get started? Obama won. Woo, I'm excited. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. I don't
Myself
care.
Myself too.
Good.
I'm not so excited, but you know.
Well, regardless of your excitement, we have to deal with his education policy, which is centered around Race to the Top, right?
Yes.
Which is his kind of blueprint reform of No Child Left Behind. So why don't we just start? Like, I don't want to go into, like, details about, like, what is Race to the Top, because I think we all understand it.
Sure.
So just start with, like, general impressions,
yeah.
Mike.
I'd say two things. One, I'd say Race to the Top is really a brilliant policy scheme. Right. I mean, what it did was it motivated states to change laws at their state house, to change really their education paradigm in their state in order to compete for this, sort of bucket of federal dollars. Now, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't a lot of money. Remember that the federal government only contributes about 7% of any local district's overall education budget. That's a pretty small number. Right. And out of all the states that went and changed laws at their state house, changed the way that things were done, only about half to one-third actually won Race to the Top money. So it was really a brilliant policy scheme in getting more states to change their paradigm in the way the Obama administration wanted than would actually get money. So I thought that was very interesting. The other thing, too, that's really important about education is that I think you're, with a lot of developed countries in the world, you're not going to find a system that we have here. Now, you know, if you go to a country like France, the education minister in France is going to know what every third grader on December 1st is going to be learning, whether you're in Paris or in a city in the southern half of the country, right? It doesn't make any difference. In the U.S., we're much more of a federal system. I think that's something to be proud of. But you do have to also ask, does it make sense to have 50 hodgepodge standards, 50 exams, 50 different ways of doing things? You know, a kid in Massachusetts is going to learn the same way as a kid in Mississippi. Maybe there's different things to learn. Maybe it's important to learn more about the South of Mississippi or about a particular item that's important to that state's economy. But by and large, students are students no matter where they are. So I think there is value in having maybe not enhanced federal presence. That's sort of another part of the discussion. But there is value in having a more uniform system. I think Race to the Top helped to accomplish that.
Mm.
Well, I think there are some good things about Race to the Top. I like the fact that it encourages charter schools to develop. A lot of charter schools have been really successful across the country. In New Orleans, after Katrina hit, in the lower Ninth Ward, which was probably the worst hit area, there was a movement to turn most of the schools, if not all of the schools, into charter schools. And since that time, a lot of the schools there have had dramatic improvements in reading, writing, and arithmetic. So I think they've reduced the gap between themselves and the other schools in Louisiana by about half. And I'm from Washington, D.C., and the school system in Washington, D.C. is really bad, despite the fact that almost $17,000 per student is spent, which is a huge sum of money, and it's yet one of the worst performing schools in the country. And since charter schools have been introduced gradually into the district, there's been some improvements. So I like the fact that Race to the Top is encouraging charter schools, because I think that's a step in the right direction. But the part about it I don't like is the fact that it is a national standard imposed from the federal government. And I would prefer it if states and local school districts had more freedom in deciding what curriculums there would be, what standards there would be. Because I think Michael would probably agree with me that No Child Left Behind wasn't such a great piece of legislation because it was too overbearing on school districts. It limited teachers' freedom. And in my view, we get the best school systems when we allow for the greatest amount of choice on the part of parents and students, and minimal teachers' union involvement.
Yeah, I think the first, I would like to do two things. I'll respond to what you said, and then I want to talk about charter schools a little bit. First, when you mentioned the fact that schools should be independent, I really do want to go back to the fact, though, that there is some value in localizing curriculum and learning about the importance of, say, in Rhode Island, learning about, you know, the importance of Roger Williams and the history of this state. But I don't think that there's, you know, a real difference in the value of teaching algebra in one place and teaching another. I mean, I think there's really a sort of a core agreement there. And I think there is value in having sort of some sort of equality across the country. If you move from one state to another, you should be able to sort of pick right up, you know, especially in today's very transient economy. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say, too, is that it wasn't necessarily federal intervention. I really would say that this was a brilliant policy scheme. States were the ones making these decisions. Now, of course, they were motivated by federal money, and we know that's a slippery slope. But states were motivated. States were motivated by the money, and they made the decisions themselves. So I think that's an important distinction to make. And I'd also
four states chose not to participate, like Texas, Alaska.
Yes.
And a couple of other.
That is true. But the vast majority.
Right. And so, like, yes, you're right. You're completely right. They have that ability to choose.
Yeah. So that's how I would respond to that. The other thing I want to talk about is charter schools, because I do agree with you that there are a lot of really great charter schools in this country and have done some great things for kids, but there are also a lot of, quite frankly, horrible charter schools, and some that deserve to be closed down and many that have. And I actually believe that it's not because charter schools are a bad idea. I actually think charter schools are a great thing insofar as they allow us to try new and innovative ideas that hopefully can then be applied to the public school districts. The problem, though, is that you have a lot of charter schools that are badly run. You have state accountability systems that are lacking. You have states that allow charter schools to open willy-nilly with no sort of accountability system, no sort of guidance, no sort of assistance from the state or local level. I think that's really the problem. When it comes to charter schools, I'm happy that Race to the Top has encouraged them. In fact, I'd like to see more of them. But I'd also like to see a focus on enhancing the accountability systems, because I think that's critical. I don't know how we can expect schools to open and miraculously, you know, solve all of our students' problems without really giving them the tools and the guidance to do so. So I would have hoped that Race to the Top would do more of that if it were to continue in some sort of form in Obama's second term.
So I have two questions. The first one's to you, and the second one is potentially to you, or it's really for both of you. So talking about a federal kind of curriculum, or right, kind of more common curriculum. Common core kind of a thing. I'm curious to see what you have to say. Like, what do you see as the benefits of localizing curriculum? Because in my mind, when students are forced to take SATs and ACTs, yeah, having a more federal common core curriculum is obviously a plus. And so that's when you have disparities in regions of the United States when children might not do as well because their curriculum might be different because of localization. And so I'm curious to see what you might have to say about that.
Right. So I think that basically the people who know best what children should be learning are their parents. And I think that it's proper for the communities of parents to decide what the curriculum should be. And so I think that, you know, parents want their children to learn all the basic subjects like algebra, reading, all those sorts of things. And even though all students will be learning them, it might be that in some places parents want students to be learning more using a particular method in class. And I think that communities should have the freedom to be able to do that and experiment with that. And if one of the benefits, I think, of not using a national system is if the national system doesn't work very well, it imposes it upon the whole country. But if you have lots of different school districts experimenting with different things, others can learn from the failures of some and the successes of others. And I think it leads to an overall better education system across the country. I don't think it's fair to say that because if we don't have a national school system, there'll be a national curriculum, people will do worse on the SAT or the ACT, because I think those tests test a lot of things that you'll find in almost any curriculum, you know, reading skills, mathematical skills, and writing skills.
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to be clear about what the Common Core, so to speak, the sort of nationwide set of English and math standards really accomplish. You know, I think what they do is set a minimum bar, right? And when we talk about curriculum, these are really frameworks. It's scaffolding. It's a set of standards that we want kids to meet. It doesn't say on March 13th, kid A will be learning this, right? What it says is that by the end of the year, children should know that their times tables or something like that. And it's up to the local school district to figure out how to teach kids those timetables, how much time to spend on it, what's the most appropriate thing to do. So I really, you know, I do think that there's a lot of local flexibility already inherent in the Common Core standards. And I would also say that there are a minimum bar, right? Schools are free to augment, to add whatever they want to do, because I think that the goal is to have, again, a minimum bar. The other thing, too, is that when it comes to that minimum, right, what we want every kid to at least know, I think it's important to have a professional set of educators determine this. Right? I'd rather have people who have experience in this field more than just, you know, a parent who may not really understand the larger context set the minimum bar. Yes, parents may want to say, well, I think it's better for our kids to learn the standards in those minimum bars this way, and maybe they should learn this too, but I'd rather have the minimum bar set by a group of professionals.
Great. So three things that are left to discuss, maybe for a future podcast, because we're kind of running short of time today.
Of course.
One thing that I want to talk about is parent accountability and how that relates to teacher accountability. And then charter schools versus voucher programs versus public schools with a strong union base. So these are three things that we should look forward to discussing in the future. Thank you both for coming.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good to see you.